Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Here's the snap. Allen going to keep it. Going to look to bust it outside. Lowers the shoulder. The surge pushing him forward. Progress. He's in for the touchdown. The beast has been released.
Chris Brown joins us. Bills Bengals coming your way Sunday, 1 o'clock at Highmark Stadium. Big one for the Bills. And maybe bigger for the Bengals, whose playoff hopes actually maybe hanging by a thread, but they are very much in the AFC North. If they can win a couple games, they have some games against their division counterparts. We'll talk about it with Chris here as he joins us on the Western Hotline. Chris, the stat I had coming in to last segment was about, you know, getting results for the Bills defense, because Joe Burrow in three games against the Bills has two games where they put up 14 points and one where they put up seven. That's the Hamlin game, which gets cut short. So early on, game script, Burrow is dangerous, and the Bills have yet to find an answer. So if they do on Sunday, to me it'd be pretty big, and it's a pretty big challenge.
Yeah, he's 3-0 against the Bills. There's no way around that. And look, he's probably, in this era of quarterbacks, in my estimation, I think play style-wise, the closest thing to Tom Brady. He plays exactly the same way. High-efficiency football, outstanding decision-making, very few mistakes. So that's why he's as dangerous as he is. There's not a lot of flash to his game. He's just highly efficient, and that's what makes him so difficult to defend. Gets the ball out quick, so the pass rush kind of gets neutralized. So going to be really important for the defenders up front to get their hands up and into passing lanes. And hopefully, because an incompletion against Joe Burrow is a victory. Because that means his efficiency isn't as high. And that's really what the aim has to be. You're very rarely going to get major splash plays against him defensively.
And with that matchup, Chris, what the Bills might have to present, because Burrow is back and Higgins is now, looks like, through the concussion protocol, so he'll play and chase back from the suspension. So they've got their three guys back. And the Bills, how equipped do you think they are going into this? The secondary's been playing well as of late, but man, the what they have available to them on the defensive line, I don't even know where we're going to end up by Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think, you know, pass rush kind of gets neutralized with him anyway, to a great degree, because he does get the ball out so fast. So yes, would you rather have Bosa? Absolutely. But it's not looking like he's going to be ready to play with the hamstring injury and the wrist injury. So you're going to have to dive deep into your ranks there, probably even deeper with the AJ Epenesa injury popping up yesterday. You have Morgan Fox and Shaq Lawson on the practice squad. There's a good chance at least one of them is going to have to come up, because you have two healthy defensive ends right now, Javon Salomon and Greg Rousseau. So both of them might have to come up this weekend. But I think what they have to do is do exactly what happened last week. Strong gap integrity against the run, because Chase Brown is a home run threat. And the first guy to the ball has to get the ball carrier on the ground. They did an excellent job of that last week. I think you have to mimic that performance. No extra leak outs for extra yardage. And, you know, Chase and Higgins are going to make plays, but get them at the catch point. Get them on the ground at the catch point. No yards after the catch, and make them earn it the long way down the field. And offensively, if you want to play a time of possession game, that's fine. You want to run the ball against a horrible run defense, that's good. all those drives, they'll have to edge up in the end zone, though.
Yeah.
You're not going to kick. You're not going to be kicking field goals at the end of drives and win a game like this.
Which is something Cincinnati last week, I know they beat Baltimore, they got a bunch of turnovers. Cincinnati was 1-for-6 in the red zone last week, which might have been some rustiness on their part. They had a couple they turned over on downs. You know, Chris, it could come down to, even though it's a 4-8 Bengals team that maybe, well, could be 8-4 if Burrow played the whole time, it's probably going to come down to, we could say turnovers, we could say red zone. That's a spot where, like you said, the touchdowns instead of field goals. And for that, you know, this receiving core is a little bit banged up. If they have to lean into the pass this week, which they didn't have to last week, who do you think it is? Because Kincaid shows up with a knee brace. We'll see how his availability is. Khalil Shakir's had a quiet couple of weeks. Tyrell Shavers had the breakout against Tampa, was quiet since. They have some options. Who do you think might be the primary idea?
Yeah, I mean, Shakir makes sense for this. And look, can you get Cooks involved on the outside with a nice package for him? I think that's an option as well. I mean, the Bengals' defense is missing Cameron Taylor-Britt. He's probably, you know, one of their better corners. I know DJ Turner's having a huge year for them. But I think the middle of the field is where they can be exploited, less so on the outside. And so, yeah, Shakir comes to mind for that. And I think much like we saw in the Tampa game, this is a Cincinnati defense that has trouble getting after the quarterback themselves. So I think Josh will have time to throw. And again, I'll beat the drum. I'm all in favor of throwing a Ty Johnson and James Cook out of the backfield as many times as you want, because those guys in space are dangerous. And this is a Cincinnati defense that has given up more yards after the catch than any team in football. 1,980 yards in 12 games. It's like 162 yards a game. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. We also mentioned that Kincaid's got this injury. The Bengals' numbers against tight ends is like pitiful compared to the rest of the league. They've given up the most. Last week, Likely and Andrews went off. I don't know like where we should be, though, Chris, on like if Kincaid is hobbled or maybe he's playing in limited, like what you can expect from Dawson Knox at this point. Like he hasn't really ever been this player, but feels like it would be a game where, you know, if you did want to focus a little bit more on getting the tight end involved, then maybe he could be a guy that could have a game. But again, like, when's the last time they've really focused a game plan on getting him the ball?
Yeah, and I wouldn't dismiss Hawes either here. I mean, he is a sneaky athlete, and I think there is probably a heavy degree of tendency with him as a blocker. So maybe you can use a tendency breaker in the red zone with him. So I think there's options there. And I would not dismiss Hawes here in this game, because I think he could play a role for you, especially if Kincaid is down.
Probably no Trey Hendrickson, or almost definitely no Trey Hendrickson. How do you feel about the line injuries going into this game? And especially, I mean, if Brown especially, maybe they don't want to risk that. Vandermark and Anderson, I'm sure, gave them some more comfort if they had to go into a game like this without Spencer Brown.
Right, and you don't really have a TJ Watt type to be overly concerned about and focus your game plan around. And it was encouraging to see Deion Dawkins, even though he's still limited, he was not wearing the red non-contact jersey yesterday. Yep. So that's an indication that he is firmly in step four of the five-step return to play protocol. So if he comes in this morning and his baseline test is good and there are no symptoms, there's a good chance, you know, maybe not today, but by tomorrow, he could get full medical clearance and be good to go for the game. So that would then shift Vandermark to right tackle. So we'll see where that goes between now and then, and maybe Coach McDermott shed some light on that this morning.
Talking with Chris Brown on the Western Hotline. Chris, you mentioned the term tendency breaker. This might be the only week that I feel like the conversation gets bigger about this. You win the toss. What do you want to do? You want to take the ball against Cincinnati? They've taken the ball and scored right away. And as we just kind of laid out, like the 14 points in the two first quarters and the two full games, should the Bills be interested in a tendency breaker, kind of foregoing the double dip idea for kind of controlling the game script from the outset?
Yeah, I mean, Sean McDermott has done it once in a while, right? I don't think he's been always win and defer. Obviously, you got to win the toss first, and they won't be picking that. But, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to it. You want to get up on them, that's fine. You know, you got your early script ready to roll if you feel really good about it and feel you can execute against a defense that's really been quite porous throughout the season. Yeah, I'm not opposed to it. I could make a case for it for sure.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see. Bills and Bengals on Sunday. Who are you rooting for, Chiefs, Texans? What should Bills fans root for here?
Well, this is in the back of my head. The AFC South is a total schmozzle right now in terms of the race. Mm-hmm. So it's wide open for three teams, Jacksonville, Houston, and Indy, since Indy's fallen back to the pack. I don't want the Texans winning that division because mm-hmm. then that opens up the possibility of facing them on the road in a wild card situation. So in a very against the grain, are you kidding me decision, I will be rooting for the Chiefs.
All right. You might.
I don't want to play the Texans on the road, guys.
Yeah, I get it.
Are you one of those, though, where like you'll
down there too many times with bad results? I mean, I'll go all the way back to the dang touchdown they got when the stupid kick returner just tossed the ball to the ref, mm-hmm. Bills hop on it, get a touchdown, and then Al Riveron calls down from New York and says, oh, no, he didn't mean to do that. That's not a touchdown.
Right. Are you one of those, though, where you'll say you're rooting for the Chiefs and then the game will start and you just can't bring yourself to do it?
I'm not going to watch it. I'm just
okay, so then you're good. Okay.
I'm just going to silently hope the outcome is what we need.
That's right. The answer. Yeah.
Very good. All right, Chris, we'll see you Sunday.
All right, take care, guys.
Chris Brown on the Western Hotline. His appearance brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. By Northtown Volkswagen, Western New York's number one VW dealership. Shop online at northtownvw.com. And by Lockport Outdoor Store, high impact gear for hardworking men and women. From the Lions' win last night, Brian Branch, standout defensive back, is feared to have suffered an Achilles injury. Further tests coming this morning. Another potential blow for Detroit. They lost a ton of defensive players last year and maybe have lost Brian Branch, who is very good. I also saw a story that the NFLPA and the NFL they've agreed on new standards for playing surfaces. This is something to watch going forward, that basically grass, or if it's going to be turf, there'll be a mutual agreement on what manufacturers, what style, what types they'll pick from a whatever. You can't just throw any turf you want. It'll have to be approved by the NFL and NFLPA. So they're going to work to get consistent, safer fields across the board, of course, grass or high-quality hybrid and turf surfaces. So anyway, no Brian Branch for the Lions.
Maybe when we come back. Did you see the Jacksonville Jaguars tweet from yesterday?
I did.
Unless you have an explanation for it, it makes sense to me.
Is it an inside joke?
I think
joke?
It's the worst tweet an NFL team has ever sent out. It is. I'm not a Jaguars fan, and I think it is offensive to all Jaguars fans everywhere.
There was reporting yesterday, my dad and
if you don't know the tweet, by the way, really quick. Yeah. It's that the Jaguars tweeted out like the link to tickets for this Sunday, Jags hosting the Colts, and said, the biggest game in Jaguars history.
Correct. And I guess it came out yesterday that the reason that was tweeted out is there's some staffer for the Jaguars that goes on some show every week and says this is the biggest game in Jaguars history.
Love it.
So it is a sort of an inside joke.
It's too inside.
I agree.
Person that calls December midweek Sabres games must wins.
You're not in a position to to criticize.
Yeah,
it's fair.
All right.
That might be the explanation. It's still offensive.
It is.
You cannot put out there, without any context, biggest game in Jaguars history, week 14 against Daniel Jones.
Yeah, I'll echo my father's words and say I'm ready to punch that guy for saying that.
I agree.
Because that's just not cool.
Well, I'm going to watch that game. I'm going to tell you how good it is.
I'll watch the game. Well, what time is it today? Same time as the Bills game?
Yeah, I probably won't watch it. Your schedule of
it is at 1 o'clock.
Games to watch. It's, you know, Bills, of course. And then the late game to watch, Chicago Green Bay, is a really good late game, right? Chicago Green Bay, if you want to watch something else, you're looking at Denver Vegas. Like, no thanks. So Chicago Green Bay, the country gets that one.
I think I'm ready for Chicago to get like a reality check here. I still don't want to buy it. I don't want to all the way buy it. Like it's mostly numbers with them, because I do watch them and they look impressive, but just there's nothing statistically that points to this is an elite team. Average team.
That's right. And Ben Johnson said they're winning in spite of their passing game.
Right.
And
It's funny because
they've won with turnovers. Their strength of victory is like the lowest in the entire NFC.
They're running the ball well. Caleb Williams on third down has been very good.
Yep.
I think he's a heck of a coach. And listen,
he's the only thing that makes me want to believe it's real.
Yeah. We'll see what happens when they face some adversity and have a couple of losses. That's going to come.
Right.
But if they win, you know what I'll be doing? I'm going to watch that locker room speech. This guy's got me.
Doesn't he have to rip his shirt off every week now?
No.
Because he did it once.
No.
It's got to be his thing.
No, he already has a thing.
His thing is ripping. Is going to be ripping his shirt off. Oh, it's the speech thing.
Good, better,
or not the speech, the chant. The
good,
chant.
Better, best.
Yeah.
Never let it rest. If your good gets better, then your better gets best.
It's just too much.
It's awesome.
It's a word salad. It's no clear eyes, full heart, can't lose.
It's way better than that.
No,
it's way better.
That is the worst take I've heard on the show in
clear
a long
time. Clear
eyes,
full hearts, can't lose is A,
it is so
fictional,
much better.
B, the players don't chant it along. This is
yeah, they do. They good, yell can't lose at the end.
Oh, they yell can't lose. Good, better, best is like how much you like singing Mr. Brightside in the stadium. The team has a chant every win.
It sounds like a riddle.
It's awesome.
It sounds like a riddle.
Maybe you've never heard it. Let's play when we get back. It's impossible not to get fired up.
I think we should put them back to back, and you tell me that the word salad Ben Johnson chant is all better right. than clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose.
Sounds great. Sounds great, Joe Kelly. Find me a good, full-throated Ben Johnson, whatever. Last week, who'd they beat? When he took his shirt off?
They beat the Eagles.
Bring that one. They beat the Eagles. That's another reason I like them. I'm in for the Bears in the NFC. Bears and Rams. All right, 803-0550. We'll remember some Bengals at 9 o'clock. The Super Great American Football Friday Frenzy, all part of your Football Friday here on WGR.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Buffalo Bills Football Friday on the home of the Bills, WGR Sports Radio 550.
Brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. By Kaleida Health, the official healthcare provider of the Buffalo Bills. And by Northtown Kia, West New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop at northtownkia.com. Now, here's Sal Capaccio with Buffalo Bills head coach, Sean McDermott.
Bills head coach Sean McDermott joins me now on the West Her Hotline. Coach, last time we spoke, it was before Thanksgiving, so I hope that you and your family had a terrific Thanksgiving.
We did. I appreciate you asking about that, and hope the same for you and everyone out there as well.
All right, thank you very much for that. And of course, you guys coming off a big victory against the Pittsburgh Steelers. For you to be on the sidelines when your team is controlling the ball like that on the ground, what does it do for you as a head coach to see that and know that your team is physical the way you want them to be and absolutely controlling and dominating the game like that?
Yeah, that's what we want to be. We want to be the more physical team. Being all about toughness in particular this time of year, mentally, and then in this case, physically as well. So really proud of the way that the guys executed that last weekend.
You and in the victory, your 94th regular season victory, that ties John Madden and Mike McCarthy for third most by a head coach in their first 9 seasons. You got to be there 9 years to make it happen, but to be in the same breath as a guy like John Madden who's done so much for the game, how cool is that?
Yeah, first time hearing of this, but that's a great honor. Like I've always said, it's never about one person. It's about the team. And that's a real humble piece to be recognized with John Madden and all those great coaches. So grateful for the opportunity, grateful for every day that we have.
Speaking of honors, Christian Benford, AFC Defensive Player of the Week. And seems like he's really stepped up his game. We know he signed a nice contract extension in the offseason. What have you seen from the growth of Christian Benford since he's been here and even through this season specifically?
I think the one thing that you've seen, as you mentioned, is the growth and from the time he arrived through, you know, a year, whatever it is now for him. And it's been really fun to watch. And, one of the things that he's had to adjust to is, he was most of the time the field corner, before this season. And now he's, moving around a little bit. And so that takes some time to adjust to and will continue to take some time. So, he does a really good job in all facets of the game.
And then Deion Dawkins is this year's nominee for the Walter Payton Man of the Year. And I think we've asked you about this before because he's been the nominee before. But for Deion to come here, same year that you got here, 2017, to see the impact that he's made on this community. I love his quote yesterday. I think he said something to the effect of, being available for people when they don't have others available to them is very important to him. And just your experience of being around Deion and having that mindset.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch this player, this person, Deion just develop over the years. Who would have ever thought, in that draft that here's this young man from Temple and the impact he would make on not only the organization but our community here in Buffalo. And again, those are the things that's what lasts, right? The impact that a player makes or anybody makes for that matter in their community. And I couldn't be more proud to know him and be proud of the way he's handled his platform here in Buffalo.
Sean, I know that it's more of a personnel side of things, but obviously a lot's happened over the last 24 hours with claiming Darius Slay, him not reporting, Jamarcus obviously now on the Texans. Is there any clarity from your standpoint, anything you know of with Darius Slay's situation?
None that I know, that I'm aware of. I'm really focused on coaching this game in the next couple of days here. Obviously unfortunate the way that thing went down, and I'm a big Jamarcus Ingram fan and forever will be here, so I'm pulling for him.
Okay, Coach. Well, you do have a game on Sunday, and there's an injury report that we need to get to here. A few guys that have not practiced this week, and a couple others showing up as limited. Is there anybody today that you know will not play in the game on Sunday?
Yes, so we have a couple. So we've got Joey Bosa. Will not practice today. He'll be out for the game, and the same for Terrell Bernard. Won't practice and will be out as well.
Okay, I see a couple of DNPs then for Joshua Palmer. Is he going to practice today?
Will not practice. He'll be listed as doubtful for the game.
Okay, and then you have Deion progressing through the protocol and Spencer Brown, who's been limited. How have they kind of gone throughout the week and where you see them?
So Deion cleared concussion protocol, so he should be good to go, barring anything popping up today. We're confident in Deion. The Spencer piece, he'll be limited today, and we'll see where it goes as we get through the day here.
Okay, Dalton Kincaid had a hamstring injury, and then he shows up with knee as well. We see a brace on him yesterday. Is that something new that's happened? Is that part of the hamstring injury? Can you kind of just give us a little clarity on that?
Yeah, great question. It's a little bit probably more complex than us lay people, non-medical people know about here, just in terms of, one thing kind of affected a little bit of the other. And he's had the knee, he's kind of worked himself. If you go back to the beginning of the year, training camp included, got away from the knee, hamstring shows up, and so over the course of trying to get the hamstring right, the knee has popped up again here. That's what I'm being told, at least. So that's my medical explanation of what he's dealing with.
And he'll practice today, though, in some capacity, Coach?
He'll be limited today, yes.
Okay, and then finally, A.J. Epenesa yesterday, he is standing off with a foot injury, did not practice. I know you didn't rule him out for the game. What is his status?
Yeah, he'll be full. He should be fine. A little something popped up over the off hours there, so he should be fine.
Okay, Bills head coach Sean McDermott. Let's get into the Cincinnati Bengals real quick, Coach. Obviously, a team here that you have a healthy respect for and what they've been able to accomplish in the AFC and against your team specifically. Joe Burrow, a tough guy to defend, a lot of receivers. What do you see from this Bengals offense, especially since Burrow's come back?
Yeah, an elite quarterback and the impact of an elite quarterback. I mean, the thing about it is, even though, they didn't have Joe Burrow, they were scoring a lot of points even without him with their personnel, the two receivers that lead that effort and then beyond that. And, Coach Taylor does a great job of scheming defenses and whatnot. And now you add Joe Burrow back to the mix and they're really undefeated as a team with him under center.
You said the other day, you know your team's backs are against the wall in reference to a question about, you know, inconsistent play. It can't be inconsistent anymore. This is an AFC matchup. You guys are obviously in a situation where you're trying to get every win here. Tiebreakers matter. AFC opponents matter. How critical is this game and to have it at home in front of your fans to make a difference?
Yeah, it's great to play at home, man. It's been a while since we've been here. We love playing here. Our fans are bar none the best in the NFL, and we're going to need them. I mean, this is going to be a great challenge for us and a great football game, and we got to go out and play our best football, as you said, backs to the wall, like we talked about last week. No different this week. Same mindset, same approach.
All right, and then we're going to have Pat Hammer on a little while, Coach. I think we're having a little snow globe. A little snow's going to be falling on Sunday. It's going to be a little cold out there. So Buffalo football, right, in December, and going to get after it at Highmark Stadium. So good luck on Sunday.
I appreciate it. Have a great weekend, Sal.
All right, you too. Thank you. That is Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott.
I don't want to say it was like it was easy with that, some of it, but like the guys were having a lot of success. I wanted to keep going to it, so why get away from it? You know, as always, you run it a couple times, you stop running it and wish you did, and then next time you run it and then you lose 3 yards, you're wondering why you went to the well too many times, right? So it's always that fine line.
Joe Brady on how they ran the same play a million times. I just hope somebody today asking the players, like to Josh Allen, I mentioned this yesterday, but the 17th time Allen say to Brady, like, just let me know if you want to change the play. By the 20th time is Allen's calling the play in the huddle. Just like, come on, you guys know.
Does he even ask anymore?
To the left, to the right, to the left, to the right, you know?
Right.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast, joining us here on the Western Hotline as we chat about Bills and Bengals and also look back a little bit to the Steeler game. Joe, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us today. We moved your time a little bit, but good to catch up this week. How are you today?
Doing well, guys. Excited for the Bills and coming off of that win against Pittsburgh. It feels like they really needed that, and it feels like some things are shaping up a little better than if that game would have went differently.
Yeah. Joe, I'll ask you the same question I kind of asked Howard, which is, does the Pittsburgh performance give you a lot of stuff to move forward with, or are you just kind of able to isolate and say, like, hey, it was a really nice game. It's nice to see them have a really nice game pretty much in all phases.
Yeah, I think it is that, Jeremy. And this team, this Bills 2025 team, has kind of been confusing in a lot of different ways. Because we've seen vulnerability and we've seen success in areas that they've been vulnerable at times as well, whether that's run defense, and sometimes it looks really bad and sometimes it looks good, or sometimes the pass rush looks really good and sometimes it's not there. And offensively, they can run the ball really well a lot of times, and the pass game can be inconsistent. But I think the identity of this team is not so much rooted in any one key element, but when they do find success, they are able to figure it out, right? Like, whatever they need that day, they can come up with it. And I think that's happened 8 times, right? And 4 times it hasn't. And so it's about what problems are presented, how do they figure it out? And I think this Steelers matchup was a good example of how the Bills were able to figure it out.
Joe Marino on the Western Hotline. All right, Joe, on to Cincinnati this week against the Bengals. A healthy Joe Burrow. He played last week. They won in Baltimore. It's a lot of turnovers that happened in that game. The defense for Cincinnati got roasted and still won. Baltimore fumbled the ball 4 times. I want to ask you about Cincinnati because we haven't seen that many matchups with the Bengals. But when we do see it, we see Joe Burrow have all the answers to the test. Do you expect that to continue? And if so, what is it about this exact matchup, Burrow against the McDermott defense, where he seems to have all the answers?
Yeah, Jeremy, I mean, we've seen 2 games of Joe Burrow against the Bills. I think he's completing like 68% of his passes, almost 600 yards and 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. Then, of course, the beginning of the DeMar Hamlin game, the Bills couldn't stop him, right? I haven't seen in, like, I guess it's about 10 quarters of the Bills against Joe Burrow have really any success of trying to get him slowed down. And, you know, that 2023 game where Sean McDermott was the defensive coordinator, he blitzed Joe Burrow like 30%, which is a pretty high rate, and Burrow killed him. And you think about some of the other games where they're playing a little bit more coverage and he killed him. So this is a big test for the Bills. I'm very concerned about the pass rush that is completely non-existent over the last 4 games, especially with Joey Bosa's status up in the air. And so I think the Bills are going to have challenges with their defense. The answer to me is they got to score. The Bills got to score. They're at home. They've been a way better team at home. Their offense scores a lot of points at home. That has to show up. And this is a Bengals defense that doesn't offer a whole lot of resistance. They've given up the most yards. They give up the most points. They're second worst in third downs. Like, this is a game where the Bills offense that's capable of going out and scoring 35, 40, 45 points, we got to see it, because I think Burrow's going to put a lot of stress on Buffalo's defense.
You feel like best case scenario, this game could look something like the Tampa game looked?
Yeah, I think that's a good call out, Joe. I think it could look very similar to that. And maybe with a little bit more rushing success for the Bills. I mean, the Bengals really don't have it when it comes to their D-line and linebackers. They're playing a couple of really young linebackers that are, you know, they're drinking through a fire hose when you watch them play. And I think this is a game where James Cook can really, really exploit some opportunities against this Bengals front. And I think that the Bills should be able to throw the ball. So what excites me about this game is what is possible for this Bills offense at home. And really, whatever they want to be, they should be able to be it. The real key is going to be you got to finish drives. So if you want to be this efficient offense that can throw it and run it and be two-dimensional, great. You got to get six. This is a game where field goals, boy, they're just not going to help you. Because I just, with all due respect to the Bills defense and a lot of success that they've had lately, we haven't seen them very strong against Burrow. And with this pass rush just, I mean, literally bottom of the league over the last 4 weeks, with no real belief that it's going to be better this week, that's where I get concerned. And so this offense has really got to show out on Sunday.
It could be interesting how, like you said, like they could be whatever they want to be. That'll be curious, because like one thing they were in Tampa was big plays, and there were shorter, quicker drives, more drives because of that, and you got a higher scoring game. And if they feel like, man, we don't have a pass rush, Bosa's not playing, and to protect our defense, let's run it all over Cincinnati and let's kind of, you know, whittle down the amount of drives that there are. I wonder if that's what the Bills will end up targeting.
Yeah, it feels a little bit more like the Kansas City script, if you will. I that's the one that I would kind of point more towards, where the Bills were, that was probably the best example of the Bills being two-dimensional, controlling some clock, being efficient, right? I think at the core, that's what the Bills want to be. But it comes down to you got to score. I mean, and not field goals. This is not a field goal game. And so I think that's a fair call out is, you know, I think we're going to get an idea for what the Bills truly want to be offensively in this game, which I think is two-dimensional, and I think it'll look a little bit like that Kansas City game.
Joe Marino joining us on the Western Hotline. Joe, looking at this defense, Shaq Thompson getting a lot of run. It feels like this has been a groundswell of support for the way they look when Shaq Thompson is out there on the field. Is it so much so now that, like, this is as obvious to anybody out there? Like, he's going to be their middle linebacker going forward, you think?
It'd be hard for me to understand anything other than that. On my podcast today, I talked about the Bills' defensive EPA with and without Shaq Thompson on the field. And EPA, you know, is not a super familiar metric for most, but it's expected points added. It's a really good way to measure how good a unit is, because it basically takes the situations that a defense is or an offense is presented, compares it to historical norms, and then gives you an idea of, like, okay, what's the expectation for that play? And the Bills defense, when Shaq Thompson is on the field, their defensive EPA would be the equivalent of what the Denver Broncos are this year, number four in the NFL. When Shaq Thompson's off the field, the Bills defense is the equivalent of the 28th best defense in the league, which is what the Tennessee Titans are. And so those would be your parallels. And I know that's not a perfect way to say it. The Bills have had 171 more snaps without Shaq Thompson on the field, but they're just better. They're just significantly better when Shaq Thompson's on the field, because I think he can kind of help mask some of the warts that the Bills have with their defensive tackle situation, where they're pretty inconsistent with how they fit the run and maintaining their gap integrity. And Shaq Thompson's a legit downhill read, react, play through contact, leverage blocks appropriately, leverage gaps appropriately, tackler. Like, he's that type of guy. He's a traditional Mike. And he doesn't hurt you in coverage either. He can help you in coverage. And so with Terrell Bernard playing through some injuries, and even when he's healthy, that downhill ability not being a strength of his, it kind of exacerbates your issues with defending the run. When you have a small middle linebacker that struggles to play through contact and deconstruct blocks and tackle, with defensive tackles that are more penetration-style guys that aren't super stout against the run, like, you got a bad recipe there. Shaq Thompson helps overcome some of that. Now, we got to be real about Shaq Thompson. He's on the wrong side of 30. He's had some significant injuries over the last few years, but while you got him right now, I think you got to get him on the field. You're clearly better with him, and at a minimum, I think this is a player that you want to keep around for as long as he wants to play. I mean, you see some linebackers out there that are aging very, very well. Levante David with the Bucks, DeMario Davis with the Saints, Bobby Wagner with Washington, and I think that Shaq Thompson, you know, can certainly help the Bills the rest of this year and maybe even into the future.
Joe, I want to ask you one question before we go. Our Twitter poll, which team would you most like to avoid in a playoff matchup? They play this week, Chiefs hosting the Texans, and whichever team loses has a big-time uphill climb. It'd be more damaging for the Chiefs. Like, the Chiefs, if they lose, have a 14% chance to make the playoffs. If the Texans lose, they're at like 37%. But here we have one team that has knocked the Bills out of the playoffs four times, and the other is the team that has made them look the worst version of themselves twice now in the regular season. So what's your answer? Which team you would least of the two like to see in a playoff matchup, Chiefs or Texans?
I'll tell you, the Bills would have to go to Houston, right? That's been a house of horrors for the Bills. We saw this year, we know last year when Josh went 9-30, go back to the playoff game where that was chaotic, go back to his rookie season, the game where he hurt his elbow. Yeah. Like, it's been a house of horrors going to Houston. But my goodness, the Bills season has ended in Arrowhead three times, right? So can we choose other? I'll be honest with you. I don't want Mahomes. I don't want to deal with Mahomes in the playoffs. I just don't. And so give me the Bills dealing with Houston. I think that would be the better matchup.
And then one more. New England, of course, is like a big topic. The division, their record, their win streak. I don't think they're frauds at all. I think anybody making the case they might be a little inflated. I feel like I want to listen to that. The schedule has been soft for them, but they've not tripped. You know, that's like the difference between the Bills and the Patriots is the Bills have tripped a couple times and New England has not. So how high is their ceiling this year, do you think?
Well, I think we look at this AFC in general and it feels wide open. I mean, as soon as you want to diminish New England, okay, well, who are you propping up? Well, that team's got problems too, right? And to your point, Jeremy, and I fully agree with you, they're 11-2. And they've avoided the slip-up. And they've had chances, whether that was against Cincinnati or against Tampa or Atlanta or even New Orleans. The Bills, right, they've had their chance to blow it, right? They've had late-game mistakes, and it hasn't cost them. And I think that's a sign of a really well-coached team that plays good situational ball, which is Mike Vrabel, right? I mean, so I know nobody wants to hear it, but, yeah, I believe the Patriots are a really, really good football team. Yes, they have taken advantage of a soft schedule, but they haven't had hiccups. The Bills have had hiccups against the Falcons, against the Dolphins. You know, I mean, against that Patriots team in Buffalo, you know, against the Texans. So the Bills, you know, you want to be mad about the Bills letting the division slip away. Don't be mad at the Patriots.
Yeah.
Don't be mad at the Bills for not taking care of the business that they need to take care of. And obviously this is all but slipped away at this point.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast here for our weekly visit. Thanks, Joe.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Joe Marino. You can find everything he does at thejoemarino.com, from his All 22 reviews to, of course, the Locked On Bills podcast, the Bills Squad Show, all that stuff. Always great to talk to Joe. When we return, I've got a conundrum, a Sabres conundrum.
A Sabres conundrum?
Yeah, Sabres conundrum. They play Philly tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I might want to use a certain phrase.
No.
Might want to use a certain phrase.
Uh-oh.
I'm ready.
Joe, get ready. You got the volume thing there? You might need to
I think I'm gonna bust it out. We'll get to that next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me.
Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.
Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, hour number two on a Friday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you here on One Bills Live, and joined now by senior producer from NFL Films, Greg Cosell, whose weekly appearance on One Bills Live is presented by Pepsi. Pepsi is the official soft drink of the Buffalo Bills. Food deserves Pepsi. All right, Greg, so Bills, Bengals here, and on paper, Cincinnati's defense looks horrendous. I realize they've made some slight improvements in a couple of areas. Yep. Where would you feel they have made the most improvement on the defensive side of the ball of late?
Again, putting aside numbers, because I, you know, obviously if you just look at numbers, you're not going to necessarily feel that they're a good defense. But I think, you know, they've obviously made major changes at the linebacker position. They traded Logan Wilson, so now they play Barrett Carter, a rookie fourth-round pick from Clemson. He basically is their number one linebacker. He plays every snap, and he does show up on film. He plays like he did in college. He's quick. He's sudden. He's one of those, you know, smaller, faster linebackers. The other linebacker who plays a lot is also a rookie, the second-round pick, Demetrius Knight from South Carolina. He's been playing most of the season. He's a good player. So, you know, I think they're better at the linebacker position. You know, it's the question is up front. Obviously, Hendrickson has not played for a good part of the season now. So, you know, up front, they've been playing Asai. They've been playing Miles Murphy, who was a first-round pick a few years ago, who's never quite become what they hoped he'd become. Where they have always struggled, and I still think they're beatable, but this is the discussion we can get into, because who knows what the Bills are going to do offensively. I think they struggle on the back end. I think that's the weakness in their defense, is on the back end. But the Bills, and I'd love your guys' opinion, you're there. Is it the receivers? Because they play now as if they want to hide the quarterback. And they've got the most physically gifted quarterback in the league, and they play almost as if they want to hide the quarterback. And then maybe in those two or three times where, gee, the quarterback has to do something, hope that he can do something.
Yeah, I think they're trying to figure out different – they figure they can depend on Josh. So they want to beat. They want to figure right. out if they can prove or try to beat teams other ways and try and develop that for postseason when you think Josh is going to be fine, if you, particularly if you protect him like they have. And by protecting, right. I mean like the called runs and you know, getting the ball out of his hands, sure. running the football, that kind of thing. And I think – but I agree with you. I they have asked less of Josh this year. Certainly James Cook has proven worthy of that. And the offensive line has played extremely well. But I think you're right, Greg. I think they're trying to find different recipes for winning games so that when they get into a tussle with a team they got to beat left-handed, their left hand is pretty good.
Yeah, and because, you know, look, obviously last week's game, the score ended up making it seem like they won fairly easily, but they had 3 points in the first half. You can't count on the Bosa play, you know, the touchdown. Then they got the interception. These are things, you know, look, you hope they happen, but you can't go into a game saying that's going to happen. You know, their offense is still for me anyway, and maybe I'm, you know, I'm old school and I've always felt Josh Allen was a great player, but I feel like there isn't really a consistent pass game week to week that, and maybe it's the receivers. Like I
well,
said,
I
maybe
think
they don't feel.
Yeah.
And look, they're not going to come out and say, gee, we don't like our receivers. No team's going to come out and say that. But at the end of the day, every coach, as you guys know, coach to what they believe the strengths and weaknesses of their offense are.
Right. And I think, to the receiver point, it's a player availability problem too. Kincaid right. has been out
I
since
Palmer,
Kincaid has been out since week 10, and Josh is a significantly higher efficiency passer with Kincaid on the field. Palmer is out, and he's doubtful for this game again. Palmer and Kincaid were to be two of the top three pieces in the passing game. When you don't have those, I think. The offensive staff, the offensive staff immediately pivots, especially when you have the number one running game in football, not to mention the fact that, you know, they didn't have either of their starting tackles last week. So if there was a week to hide Josh, it was last week, so he didn't get killed.
Right. Well, you know, it's funny, and I think we have to talk about the run game because I was fascinated. And my guess is Aaron Cromer is probably responsible for the run game. You know, Joe Brady might call the plays during the game, but I'm pretty sure Aaron Cromer would be the one that designs the run game. You know, he's been in this league almost 25 years.
Right.
He's one of the best there is as an O-line coach. You know what fascinated me, guys? For weeks, we talked about there was a stretch of 3-4 weeks where all it seemed that we spoke about was that counter gap run where Gilliam would be in the game and Hawes would be the motion guy and he'd be the kickout block and Gilliam would be the wrapper. And then this past week, there were 41 rushes, 32 by Cook and 9 by Ray Davis, okay? They did not pull an offensive lineman one time on those 41 rushes.
Yep.
Because I charted it. I started watching the game and I'm thinking, Where's the pulls? Where's the run that's been kind of a staple for, you know, 4 or 5 weeks? They didn't pull an offensive lineman one time on those 41 runs.
Yeah, they wanted to keep it easy and simple for their offensive tackles. I mean, Alec Anderson hadn't started an offensive tackle since he was at UCLA 4 years ago. Vandermark started. I think he's a quality swing tackle. But I don't think he's the same athlete that Spencer Brown or Deion Dawkins are. No offense to him. So I think that they wanted to keep it simple, and I think they weren't quite certain, you know, what they could get consistently out of those guys. So they pivoted to duo and ran that to death.
There was obviously some zone, you know, duo to me is
inside
more of a
zone
concept, obviously.
One of the
on runs that were not necessarily duo, but more traditional zone.
Right.
I thought they did a really, really good job with the O-line on two blocks that are essential in the zone run game, and that's the front side reach block and the backside cutoff block. If you can't do those blocks, you can't really have an effective zone run game. And I thought that when asked, the O-line executed those really, really well.
One of the things about this offense, and Brownie's right, when they've got all their guys, and we've made the point numerous times, they're okay when they've got all their guys, but when they don't, I mean, the offense only scored 19 points against that Pittsburgh team. They got the pick six. Yep. So that's one thing that Josh and this offense have always been able to do is find a way to score points. If that dries up, I think they've got bigger problems. But if you look back at the last two games, 19 points against Pittsburgh, 19 points in a loss against Houston. But then you get to the Tampa Bay game, and they lit them up for 40. They only scored 13 against Miami in that bad game they had. So there's been, with that, the exception of the Tampa Bay game, the points have started to dry up a little bit in the last month.
Yeah, they have. And that's why I mentioned the passing game. And I know, look, the reality is it's the NFL. Steve, you can speak to this way better than I. Guys get hurt. You still got to go out and play. And now you go out and play with what you have and the best way you can play a complete game. In other words, it's not just an offense. It's obviously a defense as well. But I know Bosa will be out this week against a quarterback that, you know, is really good. And T. Higgins is back. So they've got weapons. So we don't know how this game will play out. I'm not a predictor. I'm not a prognosticator. That's not my thing. But you would look at this game and think that they would likely have to score some points. I mean, I don't think any of you would likely see this game unless weather becomes a huge issue where it's going to be a 13-10 game.
Right.
I mean, I think in this game, you probably believe you got to at least get into the 20s, wouldn't you think?
Yes, and I'll say this, to Steve's point, the last time the Bills put big-time points on the board, it was against a team that struggles to get heat on the quarterback, Tampa Bay. Cincinnati has the same problem. So I think there will be instances where Josh will have opportunities to throw the ball, which leads me to my next question for you, Greg. You know, this will only be Brandon Cook's second game in a Bills uniform. Was utilized last week, albeit sparingly, understandably so. And it's a guy that's probably going into every week just trying to know the game plan, not trying to learn the playbook, being a late arrival. But what do you think is realistic to expect from him, knowing Palmer's out of the equation and so too is Kincaid, and they may want to lean on a veteran like him a little bit more?
And I think that there's basic routes, Steve, you know this, there's basic routes that you can run, that any receiver can run, that are part of any offense. I mean, you know, maybe you're not going to ask him to work in combination with other routes because that might have specifics to it that are a little bit different than normal. But I mean, the first third and long, you know, obviously he hit Cooks this week on the stop route outside the numbers for 13 yards. I mean, you can run individual routes, isolation routes with any receiver. You know, they know those routes. So I think that if the game demands, I think that Cooks can become a factor. Now, having said that, I'm not saying he's going to get, you know, 14 targets and go 9 for 130. But I think there are routes that are pretty universal, Steve. Wouldn't you agree that are pretty universal in every offense?
Running the routes is the easy part. It's knowing, it's communicating that's the route you want him to run, having him understand it, you know, and getting the play call without having to go out and just call her and say, hey, run the 15-yard comeback, right? So, that's the problem, is learning the words and the vocabulary. The routes and the physical part of it, you know, that's universal, right? So,
but sometimes, and you know this, Steve, you're probably in the situation with players, you know, in Buffalo, where sometimes you can call a play in the huddle, and then you can, you know, just as the huddle's breaking, you can say to you know, Cooks, hey Cooks, on that play call, you're running a stop, or whatever the route is, you just tell him what it is, you know, and he's going to know how to run it because he's run it 1,000 times in his career.
Then the problem becomes checking at the line of scrimmage and going to a different play and all that.
You do have all those other factors. I'm not saying it's easy, but I'm saying there are universal routes, and I believe that, you know, he can run those, and
certainly
that's okay.
At this point, after he's been here now going on 2 weeks, there's been a ton of study and a ton of conversations that are getting him more and more comfortable, both on the field and off the field. So, you can bet that he will have a larger menu that he can go to than he did this last Sunday in Pittsburgh.
I love, too, what Brownie said. I'm very interested to see what the Bills' approach is. Obviously, they're going to try to run the ball. I'm not saying they're going to come out and, you know, by choice, drop back 45 times. But I thought Brownie's point about the pass rush of the Bengals, which has really not been a factor much at all, you know, which has been kind of a flaw and weakness in their defense. It'll be interesting to see if they feel like they can take advantage of that. Now, again, you know, they're a running football team. They're really good at it. They get Dawkins back this week. Maybe that means you'll see a little more pulling. You know, we've seen that in the past. But, you know, there are going to be situations where you have to throw it. You are going to want to throw it at times by choice as well. You know, you'd love to see, because they don't really throw the ball down the field. And there could be many reasons for that, you know, and we don't know all of them. But you'd love to see maybe a shot play here or there, or the ball just be thrown a couple of times, you know, 20-plus yards, and see if you can, you know, get a few explosives.
Right. Flipping it to the other side, no Bosa is obviously a loss for a pass rush that didn't have a lot of production to begin with. It is interesting, though, that the Bills now have 10 takeaways in their last six games after having only five in their first six. We've seen Tre'Davious White get put in coverage on tight ends, and he's had a measure of effectiveness in that. I'm anticipating this. I'm curious what you think. I'm anticipating Tre'Davious White gets assigned Gesicki in obvious man coverage situations I'm talking about here. I think Benford's going to follow Chase, and then you put Hairston on Higgins and figure out the rest after that. What do you think about that, knowing this is the first time that this Bengals crew has all of those cats on the field since week one or two?
Well, the question becomes how much man versus how much zone do they play? Obviously, they're going to play some man. I mean, everybody has to play man somewhere along the line. But what foundationally will be their approach? The one thing about Burrow, whether it is man or zone, once you go outside the numbers, you pretty much have to match up, Brownie, as you know. And the one thing about Burrow is if he believes he has one-on-one on the outside and there's not going to be a safety that's going to be a factor over the top, he attacks the one-on-ones, and he is not shy about it. And the issue there is those create big plays. I mean, you saw that last week in his first game back when he hit Chase for 43 yards. I mean, he's going to go and attack the one-on-ones, and you just can't give up those plays. I mean, maybe you give up one just because they're so good, but you got to be really, really careful because he can hit those plays. And plus, the one thing he's really good at, and this to me is a great chess match game, because I think one of the things Sean McDermott's been really good at over the years is I think he's really good at changing the picture pre-snap to post-snap. And Burrow is so good at just seeing that. He's like a computer chip like that. And that to me is a major chess match in this game, because you know, Sean McDermott's been a master at that for years. When I've talked to offensive coaches, that's one of the first things they say about Sean when I ask him about Buffalo's defense, is that he's so good at that, just changing the picture, that what you see right away is not what you're going to get. And it's more subtle than it is dramatic, you know. But Burrow has been really good at that. That's one of his superpowers.
Yeah, and the Bills, we talked about Cincinnati's pass rush not being a factor. The Bills' pass rush, particularly now with Bosa not being able to go this week.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same. Do you think the Bills, you know, is this one of those games where you kind of rush three, drop eight, and double team the top guys, you know, all the way across the board?
It's a great question. I mean, you know, because obviously the normal thought would be, hey, you got to pressure Burrow and make him play faster. But if you don't feel like you have those guys, you probably don't really want to blitz. They're not a heavy, high-percentage blitzing team. Now, let me ask you a question. Is Bernard playing this week?
No.
So he's out again. Okay. So it's going to be the same group. You know, I tell you what, picking up Shaq Thompson turned out to be a godsend, wasn't it? I mean, that guy has played great football. Looks like he did when he was 23 years old, and he was, you know, one of the best athletes in the league. You know, so they're not really a high percentage blitzing team. It's a great point, Steve. You know, what do you do in those sort of must pass situations where, you know, if you don't feel like you can really get there with four, and Burrow's the kind of guy that, you know, he normally sees it well. Do you think in terms of clogging, you know, windows? And, you know, that's another part of the chess match in this game. You know, I don't know. It's those guys get paid the big bucks and we're sitting here chatting.
That's right. And that's we've talked about. It's going to be a really interesting matchup on both sides of this. You feel like Buffalo, both offenses have an advantage, but they also have trying to play complementary football and win the game. And you know, Cincinnati has the engine that they could, you know, put it to the floor and go 200 miles an hour, and you got to keep up with them.
Yeah. I mean, look, Burrow's the kind of guy that any given week, if he's really on his game, and, you know, granted, it's only his second game back, but he's Burrow, where he could be great against any defense. And, you know, who knows how the game will play out, you know, but, you know, as we said, it's not likely to be a low-scoring game unless weather really dictates a change in the way teams, you know, have to play.
Well, right now it looks like it's going to get 1 to 3 inches on Sunday during the day. So it's going to look a lot like the playoff game weather-wise here 2 years ago where it was snowing during the game.
What, Greg, can you say about the high missed tackle percentage of this Bengals defense? It's among the highest in the league, according to some of the next-gen stats. It looks like both of the safeties have high numbers in that area. So does Demetrius Knight, the linebacker you mentioned earlier. It looks like they've given up over 900 additional yards, according to the metrics, because of missed tackles defensively. Do you still see that as an issue that crops up on the tape?
Yeah, it does. And, Battle to me is, I don't want to call him a liability necessarily, but he's not a great athlete. He's almost more like a linebacker type player. And I think he's a guy you can go after. you know, in multiple ways. You know, he's not a great tackler in space because he's just not a really good athlete, and you can really go after him, in my view, in coverage. Stone, to me, is really more of a back-end player who's not a top back-end player, but that's what he is. You know what I mean? I mean, that's who he is. He's a back-end safety, but he's not great at it. So, you know, that's why I mentioned their secondary. And all year long, they've been trying to mix and match. They've basically made Dax Hill, you know, he's an outside corner now, will move inside in their sub packages. But they've essentially made him an outside corner. And he's probably the best athlete of their corners. But, you know, their back end is beatable, Brownie. And that's why I started by saying I'm really curious to see how they approach this, because I think there's going to be opportunities to throw the ball in this game.
Yeah, I would expect it. I think it's going to mirror something similar to what we saw against Tampa Bay. I mean, sure, they'll try to run the ball, but if they see opportunities, I think they're going to try to take advantage of them, mainly because I don't think the pass rush of the Bengals is anything to write home about. So I think they feel Josh will have time to make those kinds of plays. So hopefully it happens.
I mean, you know, you'd love to be in a situation, and they haven't been like this, as Steve mentioned. There were a time they were like this, but not recently. You'd love to see a situation where all of a sudden they're ahead 17-6, and not that the game's over, obviously it's not, but just that the game starts playing out a little differently, and you don't feel like every possession is, you know, you're sitting there on the edge of your seat, you know,
right.
That you have a little breathing room.
Right. Greg, thanks for the time. As always, we appreciate it. We'll catch up with you next week.
All right, guys. Thanks. Have a good one. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Greg. That's senior producer from NFL Films, Greg Cosell, joining us, talking to us about Bills-Bengals for Sunday at 1 p.m. And Bills Mafia, it's tailgating season. There's nothing better than an ice-cold Pepsi Zero Sugar to pair with your tailgating food rituals. As the great Josh Allen once said, Bills fans deserve Pepsi. Bills Mafia has brought it this season, and so has Pepsi. Bills tailgates deserve Pepsi. Go Bills. Well, the Friday injury report has been released, and it's official. Terrell Bernard, Joey Bosa, as head coach Sean McDermott said earlier today, are both out for this game. Joshua Palmer is doubtful. And then the two questionable players are Dalton Kincaid and Spencer Brown. And Steve and I were kind of talking about this off air. Not that you discount the importance of this game, because it's the one you're playing on Sunday, but you have a gigantic game next week against arguably a more complete opponent in the New England Patriots. And so if Spencer Brown is a little iffy for Sunday and Dalton Kincaid is a little gimpy for Sunday, maybe you just sit them down another week and have them more ready for a game you'd prefer to have them in up in New England next Sunday. Am I out of line to think that way?
No, we feel like there's gray area because we don't know, but it's a thumbs up, thumbs down. If you're good enough to play, play. If you're not, don't. That's the way it is. And if a guy like Spencer Brown can play, he's going to play. But there is the window there where if you believe Spencer Brown is not going to be 100% and Ryan Vandermark is 100% and he'll play better than Spencer Brown's 80% or 60% or whatever it is, then that's the move you make. But it should be that way regardless of the opponent. And that's what I anticipate it'll be. If they can go, they're going to go. You don't judge your player's health on who the opponent is. If they can play, they play.
Yeah. I'm kind of in that boat, though, with the 80%. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, your 80% isn't better than that guy's 100%. Just wait another week.
Yeah, and here's
get closer to 100% yourself.
For Spencer Brown, because it's his right shoulder and he plays right tackle. So everybody going off the edge goes right towards his right shoulder. And it's always under stress, and it's always something you got to have it right. And so it needs to be good in order for him to play.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens there. Could be a game-time decision.
Got to take a break here, but when we come back, we've got the tailgate tag-along. It's tailgate Friday time. We want to know what's on your menu for Sunday's tailgate before Bills-Bengals. That's coming up next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
But a month and a half away from Ryan Miller's Catwalk for Charity event. It's presented by the New Era Cap Foundation, and we are so glad it is back again. We want you to join us at Babeville on Friday, January 16th, this fun, fashion-forward event featuring a terrific lineup of appearances from Ryan's 05-06 teammates, live set from the Strictly Hip, open bar, and more. Visit sabres.com/catwalk to purchase yours today. Darren Dreger's coming in hot as we roll along here. Our hockey insider from TSN is booking, canceling, rebooking, canceling his February travel plans. Is that correct? What is going on Olympic-wise, Dreger?
Well, just to clarify, I was never going. At least in my mind, I thought I was going early in the summer, but evidently I didn't make the cut. So I'm not going. It's a sore spot. We won't get into it here.
How about the parking? Do you still, did you get your parking spot back?
No. There is no longer assigned parking. That, too, is a bit of a sticking point. But again, the segment isn't about any of that. It's not about my selfishness. It feels like we've got a weekly update on the Olympics, and it cuts two ways. It's either about Team USA and the players that they're considering, Team Canada, the players that they're considering, or, you know, the speculation on who should or shouldn't be on the team, all of that, or we're updating the Olympic venues. And the latest is, and Pete DeBoer, you know, is part of the Canadian staff, kind of dropped a, I wouldn't call it a bomb, but significant information on Toronto radio when he said that it's actually not NHL standard ice surface dimensions. It's close to 4 feet shorter. All right. Well, that's not the way it's supposed to be. I mean, there's an agreement that includes the NHL, the Players Association. I'm sure the IOC, but evidently the IOC and the IIHF signed off on this a while back. And just to give people some perspective, the Global Series, which we just saw in Sweden, right, between the Predators and the Pittsburgh Penguins. All right, well, I guess the dimensions that they're using in Milan are the same as what the Penguins and the Preds played on in Sweden. So, okay. I mean, NHL players can and will adjust. But I think what happened then is it got everybody diving into different directions here. How big of a deal is this? And then you find out that inevitably the construction delays and the issues that seem to have been dragging on now for months and months and months are still significant to a point. And let me just back up a second here, because I got the sense in poking around the length of the ice and the fact that it's just over 3 feet short, I started poking around that. And the information I got from head office of the National Hockey League is, well, that can't be accurate, or we're unaware of it. So it is accurate, but they were unaware of it. And I think that obviously annoyed head office, and I can appreciate that. So now you fast forward to the construction delays and the issues there. And I think so when you see the quote that Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly gave to Matt Larkin of Daily Faceoff late yesterday, I saw it early yesterday evening, where he essentially says, if the venues of the building isn't ready, the NHL isn't going. All right. Okay. Well, that's a fairly threatening comment. I would say that in following up on it this morning, the full expectation by the league and the Players Association, and certainly the IOC, is that the venue will be ready for a test event in January. Now, that's not to say that there aren't concerns. Of course, there are concerns, and there is the threat that it won't be ready. And then the league and the Players Association have to make a decision they don't want to make. So it's not fear-mongering, but it's not much ado about nothing either. So it's an ongoing developing story.
Dregs, we're focusing on the main building, obviously, for the events, but there's also a secondary building that will have other games. Like, you can't just play all these games in the main building. And I saw some video circulating, and it literally looks like they put a building with four walls, and it's like, no disrespect to your local neighborhood, like, very cold rink that has metal walls everywhere, but that's what it looks like.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, it just looks bad to say we're going back to the Olympics for the NHL for the first time since Sochi, and that's what is going to be the place where we're going to play games.
Well, the reality is you're not going to have the creature comforts that any hockey fan is accustomed to in most buildings, college buildings, major junior hockey buildings in North America. You're just not going to have that as a fan. And there are going to be some things, some of the creature comforts that NHL players now take for granted, they're not going to have. I don't have the specifics on what that means from one extreme to another, but I also don't get pushback, and I don't get the sense from talking to players that are agents or the PA that any of them are going to wagging a finger going, hold on a minute here. You know, if I don't have the exact dietary needs the minute I get off the ice like I do in the National Hockey League, I'm not coming. I mean, that's being ridiculous. I think that the player's focus is where it should be, and that's on doing whatever he can do to make sure that he's not only in the conversation, but he's a lock on that team. But you're right. I saw those same videos, and maybe we put the Olympic stage at a different level in terms of what our expectations of what those buildings should look like. Because the videos that I saw, even the main building is underwhelming in terms of the capacity and what it looks like. But again, we're making comparisons to some of the fantastic college arenas in North America, American Hockey League venues, major junior hockey. I mean, maybe that's an unfair comparison.
Maybe, but I mean, you rewind like 23 years at this point to Salt Lake City. And I remember a lot of people thinking that it was small-ish, but still, like, I feel like comparatively, like, you wish that building already existed right now and was ready for this 2026 Olympics, right?
Yeah, I hear you. And look, I'm sure the National Hockey League feels, because again, let's remind ourselves in this conversation of how long it took for the NHL and the Players Association to reach the agreement in the first place. First, for those two sides to come together and recognize the value and the importance of getting NHL players back on the Olympic stage. I can assure you, if you did a poll of NHL owners, the vast majority would not support going back to the Olympics, just because you know the shutdown, the wear and tear on the players, the teams now, the risk of injury, both now and at those games and everything else. But you get through all that because you do recognize that there is value in a global identity. And it's a wonderful platform for all of that. But why isn't it ready? And why isn't it up to standard? And so, you know, if there's an annoyance, you know, the head office of the NHL and head office of the Players Association, I can assure you, when you're getting quotes like the one we read from Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly in Daily Faceoff, you can imagine what is being sent to the IOC and to the organizers and the builders and whatnot in Italy. By the way, just to wrap it up, they do have, and this is the NHLPA and the NHL, have a Zoom call organized, which is a normal practice, but their next one is tomorrow, being Friday. So perhaps they'll light a fire under that group yet one more time.
When you talk about the rosters, so you got Connor Bedard, who's on fire. You got Macklin Celebrini, who's on fire. Even a guy, I have a guy like Morgan Geeky, who could be considered on that team. Like, are they stressing right now? If you were to pull the Team Canada, Pete DeBoer, and everybody, like the guys that put the team together, are they stressing because of the amount of talent and maybe the conversation they may have with some agents and some players that say, sorry, bud, you're not going? Or are they going to stick more to what their team looked like last year at the Four Nations faceoff?
Well, unless there's a change of heart and position, I think that, you know, they're going to look at the success that they had at the Four Nations and, you know, the impactful players. And there were a lot of them on both Team Canada and Team USA that deserve the right to be recognized internationally one more time. And, you know, from a Canadian perspective, why tinker with success? Now, you know, you can build a case individually with some players who maybe aren't having the year that they needed to have
to one more time, get called to represent the country. We're talking about Tom Wilson. What a year he's having with the Washington Capitals. And if there's a pang of regret for not taking him at the Four Nations, it only comes in the fact that, okay, well, there was some tough stuff and some shenanigans that went on between Team USA and Team Canada. Mm-hmm. But Tom Wilson was in the conversation with the Four Nations. So when they're not going to fight at the Olympics, but you can be certain that there is going to be aggression and there is going to be good, hard, physical hockey between Canada and the United States. So what more can Tom Wilson do as an example to make Team Canada? Mm-hmm. For me, he'd be on. He'd be on. And you mentioned Bedard. I think that the way Canada looks at Bedard is it's wonderful that he's scoring his way into the conversation. But then you look at the underlying defensive numbers and it's not great. It's not. So Connor Bedard at his age with his level of inexperience compared to another player isn't playing in Canada's top six, probably not top nine. So if he's a fourth line player, what is he doing? Is he capable of defending? Is he a penalty kill guy? You could also make the case that he's played himself into a position where if he doesn't play a game at the Olympics, other than, one of the games where Canada should win handily, what's wrong with that level of experience? And then, somebody gets hurt in the top six, and now all of a sudden you've got that option. So I don't think that Canada or the U.S. are stressing about these decisions. Mm-hmm. I think, frankly, they're looking at it and going, what a good problem to have.
Yeah.
That maybe players we weren't expecting to be in this conversation at this stage absolutely are.
Injuries, of course, a huge concern for the nations who will be in the Olympics, but it's dramatically impactful to the teams that are trying to get through an 82-game season right now.
Yeah.
And many have been crushed, and Dallas got some more bad news this week.
Terrible.
So what do they do with Tyler Seguin's injury, and does that make them a player, if they put him on season-ending long-term, to actually fill that void and actively, my goodness, they picked up Rantanen last year.
Oh, like, yeah.
Could they be adding another big name now because of Seguin's situation?
An absolute tap-in for me that they do this. An absolute tap-in because Tom Gilardi, the owner of the Dallas Stars, man, he's as hungry as anyone out there in that ownership pool. He gives Jim Neal and hockey operations all the resources needed to do what they need to do. And Jimmy Neal is wily. He is wily. And most importantly, Dallas is a destination of choice. Mm-hmm. So, look, there's so many scenarios that could unfold between now and the trade deadline. And think of it like, there are teams that are in a pickle when they look at the players that they'd consider trading, but these are players that have trade protection, be it a no trade clause or a no move clause. Well, obviously, that gets very, very problematic. I mean, it put the Toronto Maple Leafs right in the juice at the trade deadline last year, obviously with Mitch Marner. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that if Maple Leafs management had gone to Marner earlier and said, hey, we have an opportunity to trade you to the Vegas Golden Knights. Would you consider this? He'd have said, yeah. He'd have said, yeah, because it's a destination of choice, and that's what the Dallas Stars are. So, it still gets complicated. You got to make the money work. And by the way, there's a clarification that's required there because the CBA has changed, right? So it's not like when these guys go down, you use all of that money and then they magically appear in the playoffs and you're good to go. No, the only way you use the entirety of that money is if that player, in this case, Tyler Seguin, is done for the year, playoffs included. And that seems more likely than not specific to Seguin.
One of the questions, Sabres topic we had early in the show was Darlene getting a 5-minute yesterday for, boarding Trevor Zegras. I didn't anticipate any supplemental discipline in the call. Zegras played the rest of the game. But we're seeing a lot of those situations. We saw Rantanen against Romanov, where Romanov is out. Is the league needed to maybe have a refresher course with the players when it comes to, 5 feet from the boards and in those situations?
Yeah, and only invite the top end guys, right? Because, those are the guys that seemingly are causing the difficulties here. No, I don't think so. And it's funny because after Rantanen went through his second, and then ultimately because he had
the two game misconducts in less than 41 days. Mm-hmm. You know, he was suspended for the one game. I asked the player safety department. I mean, would George Parros pick up the phone, call Mikko Rantanen and go, bud, you know, you're suspended by the rule book, but you got to stop this nonsense or we're going to have no choice. But to, and then no, like, I mean, you do measure the body of the work and historically Rantanen is not that.
Rantanen isn't that dirty, but Dahlin has had some moments in his career. Yeah. Like you're like, call him and say, be careful, bud.
Yeah. But look at, again, this is why, and we've got the Board of Governors meetings coming up early next week in Colorado Springs. And I don't think, you know, we'll get invited into the officiating presentation for that. Normally it's around the GMs, but they bring the media in and then they show us ample video evidence of, you know, some of the things they're looking at, that they're trending, tweaks that they might consider, all of that kind of stuff. The one thing that I like, one of the more recent ads, is the ability for the officials to call that major penalty and then review it. Mm-hmm. All right, did we get it right or did we get it wrong? And if they uphold, then good on them, because we're all officiating geniuses, right? Mm-hmm. On the non-reviewable plays where the officials see it in the blink of an eye, they make the call, and then they've got to live with it forever. Who liked that play by Rasmus Dahlin on Trevor Zabre? Nobody.
Nobody.
Right. Including him. You know, I mean, he didn't, in the moment, he thought that it was an overreaction, I'm sure, by NHL officiating, but that's a boarding major. Dregs. And subsequent game.
We got to fly. Thanks so much for the insight.
It's my fault.
No. And as we fly, don't forget to hit sabres.com/5050 because it's the Sabres Give 716 Holiday Raffle. Huge jackpot, secondary prizes, all presented by Northtown Automotive. Again, it runs through December 27th, sabres.com/5050. Back after this.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.